The Reserve Pool, Episode 35, Draft Strategy. Everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode of The Reserve Pool, a podcast about Dice Masters, but more importantly, all of the people who love to play it. This is Dave.
And I'm Evan.
And, you know, Evan, we were looking at it, and we realized that we haven't talked about recent games that we've played. We talked about what we're looking forward to. We gave a little bit of a look back at our favorites of 2014, but I don't know what you're playing right now. What are you playing, other than Dice Masters?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff. I guess I'll lead off with, I found myself roped into a lot of games of, like, Avalon and Resistance, Two Rooms and a Boom. A lot of those, like, bluffing games, which I'll admit I'm not super fond of. It's not that they're bad. I think a lot of these games are actually quite good. They're not my cup of tea. I did play some Love Letter, which I actually found enjoyable because the pool of cards available is small enough that it sort of becomes a logic puzzle more than a bluffing game. So I kind of like that. But that's one of the big things I've been playing lately.
I don't mind Love Letter, but I feel like sometimes the decision is made for you that you don't really get to choose. I think the illusion of choice comes out a lot.
I can see that, yeah. I can see that.
It's an elegant game. I know a lot of people like it, but I think there's less agency I think there's less agency in it than
one might otherwise think.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I definitely had fun just because I sort of was able to use this, and this it out, so they must have this, and then
right.
I was usually right, and I you know... It makes you feel smart. What can I say?
Yeah, I mean, it might not always be because you figured it out. It might just be that it's what the game forced your opponent into. But as I say at work all the time, I didn't do anything special, but I certainly will take the credit.
Yes.
Yes. Boy, recently I've been playing, well, not exactly a social deduction game like those, but fun in its own right in a similar way, which is Cash and Guns. And of course, I've talked about this before, but something about pointing a foam gun at your friends just never gets old. it's a blast. I can't really say a whole lot more about it. It's too fun. And if you haven't checked out the most recent update to it, I recommend you do. I believe different from the original is two more guns, so eight players, and some differences with some of the roles. I know people have decried the lack of the Bang Bang card, but I'm okay without it. And, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, that's one I've sort of meant to look at. But it's, again, one of those, like, bluffing-y social interaction games, which half the time I'm like, I don't know what to do, and sort of be very silent, which frequently actually works really well, but... That's another story entirely. Then I don't feel smart.
It works pretty well with both gamers and non-gamers, which is part of its charm. I can easily take this to my regular game group, and everybody has a blast. But I can also, like, pull this out at the holidays with family, and everybody is also into it. There's something about your aunt pointing a foam gun at you that just... nothing like it.
I've also had a lot of fun with Machikoro, which is kind of like Catan if you made it about a third of the length and it was all cards. Very like similar sort of you roll dice and stuff happens and people get things or people steal things from each other. It's very, you know, simple and elegant, and I do think there's a chance that there could be a dominant strategy, and we're sort of kowtowing to it after like three or four games of it. But, which, you know, if it's that simple to pick up on, that's something I'm a little like, but, you know, I think everything has a fair shot, and it's definitely a fun and really stylistically nice game. So I can recommend it.
I've heard a lot about it. I've also heard some complaints about it. I don't know. It's one... If there's a chance, I'll pick it up. I know it's not very expensive, or tends not to be, so if it's one of those things where, oh, well, hey, that'll get me free shipping, I'll throw that in, if you know. But
right.
I don't know. It looks interesting enough, but I don't know that it's something I'm willing to go out and buy. You mentioned Catan, and one thing actually haven't gotten to play yet. I talked about Seafarers once. Haven't gotten the chance to play Seafarers yet with my Catan game. And, well, one part is I haven't had the opportunity to digest the rules. I've been a little more excited about going through the rulebook for Zaya. But the other side of it is...
Someone brought that to gaming yesterday. We didn't play it, but it looked interesting.
I did not undersell it. I mean, doesn't it look so cool?
Yeah.
Now, I know some will say... Okay, let's go on that track for a moment. Some will say that the awesomeness of the components and the presentation is what's getting in people's like heads and, you know, kind of blinding them to some issues the game has. But at the same time, I mean, it is... well, let's go with Tom Vassell's way of saying it, an Amerithrash game. And, you know, that's all right. There's a lot of dice and a lot of randomness and everything like that. And you have to be okay with that going in. I think there are a lot of players who will not just on principle like that kind of game. And that's all right. But yeah, the game looks awesome. But Catan, yeah, we were just visiting my in-laws. And normally that means let's get a few games or something in with my sister-in-law. We have a third person. Hooray, hooray. Well, the problem is I don't really play Catan with my sister-in-law anymore. Because, well, I like my sister-in-law. She's great. You know, family and all that. In Catan, she thinks it's hilarious to just target me for no reason. Now, I will say that I am weirdly good at Catan. I win more than my fair share, and I've had more than my fair share of, like, complete upset, come from behind, should never have happened victories. But that's not really why. She just thinks it's funny. And, you know, I get the robber. And I'm saying, like, she's in her, like, almost mid-20s now. I get the robber constantly. If she can steal from somebody, she steals from me. If, like, whatever she can do, it's just, it's not enjoyable the way that she does it. I wish she will play suboptimally just to mess me up. And that's not fun in any game.
Yeah.
So siblings. I haven't tried Seafarers yet, and I'm so excited to do it.
But you need to find not your sister-in-law to play it with.
Yeah, well, we actually have a friend that we've made in our area, which, I mean, we've moved a few times over the last couple of years, and that's difficult to find, like, local friends. We have all of our good, tight, close friends from college, but they're all about an hour away.
Right.
Which we still see them with a... You
only
know,
an hour
with
away.
A lot of regularity, but still.
Mine are on the other side of the country, so it's even harder.
There you go. That's true. You've talked about that before. But we've made a friend out here, and it turns out he's into this kind of gaming. And now, not with the same kind of depth and breadth, but he has played Catan and is very intrigued about Seafarers. We've talked to him about that, and so we're going to have him over sometime soon and get it going.
Bring some Dominion. Before long, he'll be playing Eclipse. Maybe even Twilight Imperium. One day you'll get him on Diplomacy, and that'll be it.
He's played a lot of the modern... He's played Ticket to Ride. He's played... I believe he's played Dominion, Carcassonne. I don't think he's played Bonanza, but I think he'd like that. So, yeah, I think there's a candidate for roping into the hobby there. Let's check in with Chris about something that you and I are both working on as well, building a Dice Master scene.
Welcome to Refilling Your Dice Bag, the Reserve Pool's guide on building a local Dice Master community. This is Episode 2, Gamer Speed Dating. In Episode 1 of this segment, we talked at length about how to get your friendly local game store on the Dice Master's train. We're going to launch into this episode assuming that you did just that. Congratulations! You got yourself some store buy-in at a real brick-and-mortar store. You're awesome! Not only do you have a local source to buy Dice Masters from, but you've started a relationship with a game shop owner that's mutually beneficial from both sides of the fence. So, what's your next move? Well, step two of successfully planting a Dice Masters community is to get people playing. You can't grow a community of players if you don't have players, and you can't have players if people aren't playing. Is that confusingly obvious enough? Right, let's keep going. There are a lot of different strategies and ways to attack this, but I'm going to start from square one and assume that practically no one else at your FLGS is playing Dice Masters. With that in mind, we enter Gamer Speed Dating Mode. The title's more of an ear catcher, so take it with a grain of salt, but the concept I want to introduce to you is the same as speed dating would be. You want to cast out a wide, shallow net and pitch Dice Masters to as many fellow gamers as you possibly can. You're not necessarily aiming at quality of player base at this point, you're looking for quantity, plain and simple. the first thing to do is to come up with a solid elevator pitch for Dice Masters. If you're not familiar with marketing or sales, an elevator pitch is a couple of sentences used to pitch a product that should give all of its selling points in 30 seconds, maybe a minute tops. Your job is to condense all the things you love about Dice Masters into a couple of complete thoughts that you might use to convince someone who's on the fence to give it a try. Now don't sweat this. I assure you, it's going to come naturally. Don't focus on writing some big, amazing, loud sales pitch that sounds like it comes from a monster truck rally or the announcer at a WWF match.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday is the day you'll play Dice Masters with me. It's like magic, but better, and it has superheroes and cards and dice and other cool stuff.
Not like that. Instead, focus on the things you like about the game. If you're tuning into these segments because you're interested in growing your local community, that tells me that you really enjoy playing Dice Masters. What do you like about it? Is it just the theme? Is it the dice, the character cards, the interactions? Then turn your focus to something similar that you can create positive common ground with. I often use Magic the Gathering as my starting point because there are several similarities. You could also use Marvel Legendary or HeroClix or who knows what else? Only you know what the gamers in your area are into, and only you can leverage that to your advantage when selling the finer points of this game. Here's an example of an elevator pitch that I've used when describing Dice Masters to others. Man, I'm really into this new Marvel Dice Masters game. Have you played it? It's got everything I love about games. Cool custom dice, team-building strategy. It plays pretty quickly. Have you ever played Magic or any other CCG? Oh, this is right up your alley. The buy-in's actually super cheap. I mean, $20 to $25 can get you started right away. Oh, and it's superheroes. Did I mention that? Avengers, X-Men, Fantastic Three, all of them. Just as an aside, the Fantastic Three reference is an homage to Katie, just in case anyone's wondering. So now that you've got your pitch, what do you do? Well, the next thing to do is to pitch it to everyone, as many people as you can and as many times as possible. Now, there's a certain finesse to this so that you don't come across as overbearing, but you want to spread the word about this game like it's the next best thing since sliced bread. My advice is not to interrupt people who are playing other games to tell them about Dice Masters. Wait until they're done. You can spark up a conversation naturally then. However, if it's one of your similar games that you're pitching it based on, don't miss out on this opportunity. Be sure to get in there and throw your pitch down, making those key connections between Dice Masters and the game they're playing right now. The last thing you can do to try and connect gamers with the game is probably the most important. Play it. If no one is playing Dice Masters yet, then it's gotta be you. Carry it around with you whenever you're out and about at the game store and keep your schedule open, assuming you have some free time, that you can sit down and teach the game to someone new. Now, teaching a game to an acquaintance or a stranger can be intimidating. Don't feel ashamed to rely on the Watch It Played video or any other resource out there on the internet to teach it. Hopefully you'll get to the point someday where you'll be confident enough to teach it yourself. If you put all these things together, you'll build a real enthusiasm for playing Dice Masters that will be contagious to everyone around you. Keep at it, and it will pay off. On the next episode of Refilling Your Dice Bag, we'll talk about how to maintain a player base through events and organized play. Thanks for listening, and remember, games are only fun when we're playing them together.
This is Taking Action, a periodic look at how to get the most out of your basic action cards. Today, we're going to look at Transfer Power, a basic action card from Uncanny X-Men. This one costs just 3 to purchase, and its text is as follows. Roll a character die from your used pile. If it rolls a character face, field it at no cost. Otherwise, place it in your bag. And it has a global 2, which says, pay a shield, swap the attack value of one of your characters with that of one opposing character. Well, there's so much to talk about with this card, so let's start with the ability text. I like this a lot. Now, basic action cards are not always a good buy, but they do give a good return on energy, and this one I think gives a good return on ability as well. You can use this on characters that you just purchased, or perhaps on characters that are waiting to get into the bag.
Even if it doesn't come up as a character face, you still have the opportunity to put it into your dice bag, perhaps a little bit sooner than you otherwise could have, which allows you to get it out of your bag, of course, and rolled and used on your field just a little bit faster. That's a win. It's also saving you a bit on fielding cost and the fact that you might be able to field something straight from your used pile. So that's pretty awesome. But man, I'd really be remiss if I didn't talk about the global ability on here, because this is pretty awesome, and I've seen this used to great effect in organized play events as well. This one allows you to swap attack value of your character with that of one of your opposing characters, and that is pretty big. In fact, this won me a game, though I hadn't intended on using it for my team at the time. With this, I think it combos well with some of the weenie squads. I think this works well with a lot of Ant-Mans or Psylocke, Quantum the Assassins, different things like that, especially the common Ant-Man, because you can get him for such a low, low price. So if you do that and you have a way of controlling blockers, say with the Relentless basic action, you're spending some energy, but you're going to get some characters through, and you're going to be able to make them a little bit more powerful than they otherwise would. When you have a lot of those quick and inexpensive characters right at the beginning of the game, you end up setting up a little more of a defensive match. Your opponent may not be attacking because they know that all they'll be doing is setting you up for a bigger role next turn. So they'll have some of their beefier characters. And then if you provide some of the means for blocker control, or for perhaps setting up characters of your own that cannot be blocked through one way or another, you enable yourself to have a little bit of success with this. So, that's Transfer Power. How do you like to use it? You let us know in the comments.
I think with that, we're getting on to our feature segment.
Yes. Right now,
which
in fact.
Today, yes. So today's feature is going to be talking about how to draft effectively. Nowadays, Rainbow Draft is really popular, and I can see why. It means that whoever hasn't gotten the it sort of removes some of the, well, I got lucky and got the awesome cards, I yep. win. Makes you think on your feet, which is always fun. And, you know, you can go in, there's not a huge buy-in to go and, you know, have a good selection of cards to play with. And it's, the OPs seem to be favoring it now, and so on. So, how to draft effectively? Quite important nowadays.
It definitely is, Evan. I mean, the OP event that I recently got to go to was a Rainbow Draft, and it was a lot of fun. And I hadn't really experienced a draft before in any game, to be honest with you. So, it was a new experience for me, but there was something kind of neat about sitting around the table as we're opening the packs and sorting everything out, the kind of the table talk with that and, you know, really looking at the cards or, you know, how you make the best of a bad, you know, hand that gets passed to you and things like that. It was a blast.
Yeah, or it's been a while since I've drafted and I haven't had the pleasure of being able to do so in Dice Masters, but I did so with Magic a while back. Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, sometimes you know, there's also some fun getting a relatively good hand and then completely messing it up.
Well, yeah, and actually, if you look at the website, Randy talks a little bit about that because he probably drafted about one of the best things you can get out of a draft, and it didn't quite work for him. And upon reflection, he recognized some things that he would have done differently, but. Definitely Randy experienced a little bit of that too.
Yeah. So,
well, that said, Evan, I mean, don't shortchange yourself. We have all done a little bit of the blind drafting, which is a little different because it is stuff that we already own, but you don't know what you're going to get. And well, I don't know if you've done it this way.
I've definitely played some of the Daredevil draft, right. Which isn't quite the same, but it's similar because you're not quite sure what you're going
to
get.
Well, a wrinkle my wife and I added to that, which I don't think we were doing before, maybe you've added this in on your own, was to draw more than we actually needed and then make your bet. Like maybe if you're going to do 8, then draw 10 and then make your best team of 8 or, you know, so maybe draw 12.
Yeah, I mean, the re-rolls were, or not the redos, sort of, or the mulligans, really.
Yeah.
Were there to prevent you from getting stuck with total garbage, which I guess is something that could happen in an actual Rainbow draft, but you're probably not going to get stuck with total junk.
No, and of course there are sites out there. I believe people have made draft simulation resources, though. Frankly, I haven't used them.
Future Dave here. We actually just used one, and if you look at our YouTube channel, you see a video of myself playing with my wife, and we used a draft tool that we found on BoardGameGeek. It was pretty fun. The tool tries to adjust for rarity, so you're not just going to get a whole bunch of, who knows what, the way you can in the blind drafting that we had been trying before. It helps you simulate more of a sealed deck rather than a draft, because there's no synergy between the cards that you're going to get, but it still makes you have to think about making the best of what you have. All right, let's go back to the show.
My thoughts are generally, I mean, before a draft, what I'm trying to do, or what I did try to do in this case, was make sure that I had a good understanding of how just about every card could be used. I mean, there's some that I frankly just don't have much of a use for, but I wanted to make sure I had a good understanding of how the majority of cards could be used, and we did that by playing a lot of blind drafts. I played a lot with commons and uncommons especially, the things that we're going to be seeing a lot of.
Right. I mean, you don't necessarily need to know every card in the set backwards, forwards, sideways, up, down, you know, every which way. But knowing, you know, a lot of the commons, because you're going to be seeing a lot of the commons, and most of the uncommons, knowing what stuff can be used well, what things can be, you know, what you can leverage frequently, I think that's a really strong preparatory skill for drafts.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't mean sit there and study, like, oh, all of these cards can do this.
Just consume the database.
But you have to figure you're going to be opening 12 booster packs on your own. That means there is stuff you get to see. So you kind of have an idea of what, you know, oh, I see this in my first hand. I see this, you know, the first set of 12. I see this in the second set of 12. I'm going to try for this. Like, those are maybe two cards that you can target because you're going to start with that set. And that's not necessarily a bad way to go, but being able to recognize what a little bit of what you have and what some of the possible synergies are is definitely big. And I think that just about everybody who I played with in the event did a good job of recognizing that with the lot that were dealt.
Yeah, and I mean, I think part of it is going to be being open-minded. There are cards that you would, you know, maybe not even consider in constructed play.
Yes.
That, you know, you really need to give a second look. I think particularly cards that give, you know, that, you know, are nice little offensive attackers, you know, Black Panther, X-23, Ant-Man to a degree.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because Black Panther, it felt like after a point in the draft, a lot of us were getting Black Panther cards and nobody really seemed to want him. Well, a person that I played against, who I did ultimately beat him, but his team was very well crafted, and it was anybody's game. It was very close. His name was Ken, and he's run some Dice Masters events himself, and he seemed very, very up on his knowledge of the game. Good guy. But Ken had a team that used a little bit of Magneto's Hellfire Club, which did cause me trouble when I couldn't field villains as quickly as I wanted. That's the one that damages you when you don't have a villain out
right.
there. As well as Black Panther's blocker control card, the one where if he doesn't attack you, somebody can't block. And the She-Hulk that requires two blockers. And he was ahead 13-1 at one point. I was just able to come back and turn the tables fully on him. New respect for Black Panther, and especially the synergy that he would have with that specific She-Hulk, or perhaps the heroic card, the heroic pairing, where they must be blocked by two as well. It gave me some inspiration to try some new stuff in Constructed. I put together a deck that basically did some of that, and I pitted it against, you know, just the block, I guess, like kind of the light version of Flying Sidekick that we've talked about before, only UXM cards. And it competes, and it also competes against the villain deck. So, you know, something I wouldn't have considered led me to a strategy that I'm actually having a lot of fun just playing with on my own outside of draft.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things. I think some of the toads who also do similarly, just messing around with it, your player with, you know, what you can attack with, would be really strong, and would be stronger than you'd expect in draft, just because, you know, it's not just you don't necessarily get this strong, coherent plan that runs through your entire, you know, set of cards. Everybody is sort of scrabbling for what they can do. So when you have a card that can just mess up everything, it really can affect people.
Definitely. I mean, the way it worked for me is basically a lot of what we've already talked about. So when I got my... And of course, I've talked about this in some other sources, but it's pertinent to this conversation, too. I saw in my first set of 12, Pyro's Rare. And in my second set of 12, I saw Scarlet Witch's Rare. And I knew I wanted to go Bolts, but I knew there weren't a lot of Bolts that cost less than 4. Well, Scarlet Witch was one of those. So I went with the Pyro Rare, I went with that Scarlet Witch, and I grabbed other Bolts as I could. Iceman was especially helpful, and I used Professor X for his Global. And the goal was to have that magic then be able to be a first turn buy while saving a mask for use with the Professor X Global. And generally, in every game but the last, it worked. I couldn't get a Bolt to save my soul on the first turn, and so I couldn't purchase her, so it sent me back a turn the whole game, and that was the one game that I lost. Of course, the guy I played against, Brian, had a very well-crafted deck as well. Nonetheless, you know, that was what I wanted to do. But it was seeing some of the stuff that was out there and available to me that I knew I would get the first crack at. That is very important. The nice thing about this kind of draft is, one, the two separate piles, and two, the fact that you can kind of look out and see, okay, I am seeing a whole bunch of Ant-Man dice. There must be tons of the common Ant-Man. So I'm going to load up on him. And actually, that can be very effective if you're doing the right kind of stuff. I mean, those two cost characters in draft should not be discounted.
Yeah, no, I mean, just because people don't get the same level of control over what they're putting out, you know, maybe Professor X won't be around, and so on and so forth, people may have problems just fielding stuff to some degree. I mean, hopefully not, but it'll be a little more iffy than normal. So just, you know, bum rushing your character, or your opponent rather, with cheaper characters, I think it becomes a little more of a viable strategy.
It does, to an extent. Now, Ant-Man helps with some of the stall tactics that you might want to use.
Because you can flip around their stats.
Well, I'm talking about even just the 2-cost. You can buy him up real quick, and he's going to feed you some energy. And he's also going to give you some blockers that are just they're just better than a sidekick for some of those early turns. So you have a little bit of a wall to hide behind.
Yeah, I mean, there's that. Also, you know, if you get the opportunity to sandpaper your opponent with a rush, there's that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, just like you said, help you smooth out the power curve with 2-costers, especially because there aren't that many 2-costers, or there aren't really that many cheap characters not in the, like, sort of in the packs. So,
well, I mean,
get them when you can.
I think you do see a fair amount of the of those basic cards nonetheless. I mean, there was a lot of the Ant-Man going around. I could have had them. You know, they were available to use if you wanted them. Me going Bolt, it just didn't seem to make sense. But
and there's no cheap Bolts?
No, but they were smart for that. They really were.
Yeah. No, it works. I think it would unbalance other cards some if they hadn't.
Right.
You do have 3-cost Bolts, so there's that.
Mm-hmm. But I think the big thing with the draft is definitely paying attention to the information that you have as you're opening packs. Again, you know what you have in front of you, and you know what the dice are that are on the table. And the fact that you have that information truly does help, because it lets you form the basis of your strategy, and then you're going to get enough decent cards. I mean, it's going to diminish as it goes around the table, but you're going to get enough cards in front of you that can generally fit that strategy as you pass it around. Now, Evan, you talked about not getting your rolls. That was absolutely the case for Randy's brother, Kyler, who was my first opponent. His team made sense. I understood the strategy that he was going for. He and I talked about it afterwards, but he just he couldn't get a character to save his life. He wanted to quickly build up and basically punch me in the face. Now, he had solid energy rolls to let him get some big characters pretty quick, but he had a hard time getting characters out, and actually that ended up he ended up losing 20 zip. That wasn't really his fault. Some of it was just the dice cursed him. He didn't have access to some of the cheaper characters either, though, which definitely hurt him. He had big energy rolls, but the fact that he didn't have stuff he could get out early to hold me off was ultimately what did him in.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's sort of tougher and why I almost say sort of favor getting a few little guys when you can just to try and stave off that problem.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, if you can rush with them, great.
What I have to say in general, though, is that draft really shines in this game. There are a lot, as I said, a lot of combinations that I hadn't considered initially until I saw them there, that Black Panther thing being one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of curious as to how aggro would fare in a draft sense, because there's definitely a few really big attackers in this set that you could probably pick up on the cheap. Though I imagine Pyro probably goes really the common Pyro, I imagine, goes really fast. As he's got a fairly strong special ability.
All of the Pyros definitely got some use. I had the rare one, and I thought that might be my only chance at seeing a Pyro. I did get to see one other, but I ended up using the rare. I had so many bolts that I was able to take advantage of his ability when he attacks to roll from the used pile and get some bolts out there to do some direct damage to my opponent. Now, there was a little bit of a rules conflict with the transit zone. There were questions, and I think we ultimately it was ruled incorrectly, which is that dice that you purchase aren't immediately in used, but they are.
Yeah, I believe they specifically go straight to use.
Yeah, and there was some confusion about that, so it didn't affect the first game. That was the way we played, and that's the correct way to play it. The second game, it was decided by somebody that no, that's not how it should be done, and we just kind of went with that in the interest of time and sportsmanship. It wouldn't have made a difference in the last game. I don't think it made much of a difference in the event, but that does impact the effectiveness of that specific pyro, because if you buy a couple, I mean, I had one turn, the big one for me was I was able to buy two Iceman at once, and then I rolled a whole bunch and showed four bolts. Now, if I couldn't have rolled those Iceman, I wouldn't have had as many bolts to show. It was pretty crazy, and that was four damage to my opponent.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, honestly, I think the other really good way to, get better drafting, practice. Go and do a mini rainbow draft with a couple of your friends or something if you can, or just, people at your local gaming store. Go by one day that isn't a draft day and see if you can do some drafts. I'm looking forward to getting to do that as hopefully once I get a bunch of people playing at my local game store, I'm going to probably try and do some rainbow drafts, especially if I can get an OP kit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I haven't yet had the chance to speak with somebody. There's a new a local gaming store that I'm targeting. It's not that old. It's closer to me than the one I had been trying to get into things. Again, as I mentioned, the new location that I'm working at, it just the old place isn't going to work as well, even though it's a very nice store, and I really like it a lot.
Right.
This place is closer, and that's where we're targeting, and that's going to be the goal there. I mean, just get people playing. It's a lot of fun. The draft does leave things a little bit more of an even, an even keel. Lauren doesn't really listen or read a whole lot of this stuff. I mean, she has to hear me talk about it. She drafted a team and went 2-1. The only guy she lost to was the one who ultimately beat me and won the tournament. So, you can, if you understand the game, even if you haven't seen every card, you can be pretty effective with the draft. You just have to look at the abilities that you have and be able to envision some of the potential.
Yeah, I mean, look at what's on the dice pool. Say, this is probably, you're probably going to have a common, maybe some, probably going to have the commons, maybe an uncommon of those characters. And, given that, in my opening hand, what do I think I can leverage well?
And that's where, as you said, really towards the beginning of being open-minded really comes into play.
Right. you know, maybe, you know, there are plenty of cards that a lot of people wouldn't, you know, this is just sort of average, you know, it has uses, but I wouldn't do much with it normally because it doesn't really fit into the power plays, but you're not going to be able to play the power plays, most likely. Maybe you'll have some really awesome luck and you'll get, you know, Nasty Boy and Pyro and Iron Man, all the other awesome stuff, and you can, you know, run a villain deck, but most likely not. So give those guys you'd pass over normally a second chance because they might surprise you.
And certainly that was the that was what it was with Black Panther. I mean, there was a mix of experiences at the table, but frankly, nobody really cared to take him except for Ken, who had a solid team. I mean, he really did. I liked it, and it, as I mentioned before, it inspired me to try something with Constructed. So don't overlook anything. There are potential uses for all of those cards, even the ones that we make fun of from time to time.
Right. Except Emma Frost. No, I'm kidding. Actually, you know, given that people might be, you know, doing what you did and focusing on a Bolt strategy or something, it might be time. Well, Emma Frost isn't Bolts, but Bishop's time to shine.
Right.
But, you know, given
Emma Frost,
maybe
anything with fists, if you're doing a lot of Black Panther, She-Hulk, and Ant-Man kind of shenanigans.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, you know, since people aren't going to follow the same patterns, something that just says no, I just ignore things from these energy types might be more effective because people are going to be forced to play those a bit more.
And that's where the consideration of meta becomes it really is the final piece of the puzzle here to the whole conversation. Exactly as you say, if you have played a couple of drafts at this store and you know that people tend to go for the Bolts, Bishop becomes a good play. You know that people tend to go for the fists. Emma Frost becomes a good play. Now, maybe you're not necessarily going to get her super rare, which I think has some of the most effectiveness against fists, but it's going to be there. Maybe there are people who don't like a lot of villains or rely on just one or two villains and they got to get them out eventually. That Magneto Hellfire Club, where you take damage for not having villains, does become very viable. And again, even my deck had its own share of villains, and that Hellfire Club caused me some problems early on.
Right.
So, considering the meta is important, and you have to know, you have to remember that there are a lot of cards in those booster packs that are specifically there as meta responses.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, Quicksilvers and all kinds of other guys who, you know, maybe they wouldn't be in the, you know, maybe they wouldn't be in my deck because it's really focused on this stuff right now. But when you're just, you know, when you're playing with what you got and everyone's focusing more on, you know, sidekicks or getting this guy out or getting this or, you know, getting what they can out, something that wouldn't shine before might, you know, might win you the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it could. So please share with us your drafting strategies. Mailbag@thereservepool.com. We'd love to hear from you. What's worked for you? What hasn't worked for you? Are we completely off base? I mean, I don't think we are. I think that's pretty sound logic that we put forward here. But
hopefully you'll find out if I'm out of base soon.
Yes, hopefully you get the draft yourself. Out of this world. But yeah, let us know what you think. Mailbag@thereservepool.com. Of course, we're on Twitter @thereservepool. Leave us a review on iTunes. Believe it or not, it does help us get the word out. We are so pleased with all of the positivity that we get in all of the emails that you send us, in the vast majority of the iTunes reviews. But it does help us get the word out there, and it helps visibility for us, for the game, and everything else. And consider supporting us on the site. We're not asking for anything, and we're not going to go anywhere if you don't, but we'd really appreciate it if you did.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, thank you so much once again for spending your time with us today, tonight, or whenever you happen to be listening. This is Dave.
And this is Evan.
And this has been The Reserve Pool.
Now the Overpool.
Yes, I
Overpool.
Guess. Now the Deadpool. Bye, everybody.
Bye.